About the dangers of traveling through Deathlands, Uta and Benji had refused to turn back to their homestead, which was understandable. Without antibiotics, the cholera raging through Brighamville was a death sentence. At an earlier point in his life, Ryan would have flat-out refused to convoy the young family to safety because of the additional risk to his own crew. In his wild years with the trader, his first responsibility had always been to himself, to ensure his own survival, and after that, the survival of the people on whom he depended. With age and experience, with his son Dean traveling at his side and the steadfast love of Christy, he had acquired a little bit more compassion for his fellow man. To abandon the young family on the edge of the plain when they had every intention of crossing with or without an armed escort was no different from murdering them all in cold blood. Though a bullet in the back of each of their heads might have been a quicker, kinder fate, he found he had no stomach for the role of executioner. After a brief discussion in private, Ryan and his friends had agreed to take the family under their wing. None of them liked the idea any more than he did. Before they'd gone 50 yards along the dry stream channel, they'd come across scattered bundles of fly-swarmed, stiff and bloody rags. It was all that was left of another group of recent refugees from the Ville. They'd made easy pickings for the things that lurked in the willows. It had been just the first of half a dozen such unpleasant discoveries.
How much farther?
She shared her purified water with the oldest girl. Mildred moistened a cloth with her canteen and mopped the middle child's heat-flushed face with it.
Another 2 hours to the outskirts of Perditionville, if we're lucky.
Something moved in the brush to his right. A shadowy form shifted behind the thick screen of branches. Ryan swung the Styre around, aiming it from the hip. Every other blaster in the arroyo sought and located the target. A muty deer stood there, frozen for a second, before it caught their scent and was gone in a mangy blur. The companions held their fire. It wasn't a herd of scab-assed deer flanking their every step. Ryan stared down the riverbed, cursing Jack Lauren for taking so long. Benji thumbed back the hammer of his single-shot Stevens 12-gauge. It locked in full cock position with a butter-soft click, a smoothness that came from age and wear. The weapon was more than 150 years old, and had seen much use, passing through many sets of hands before it had reached his. In the shotgun's chamber was a precious, high-brass, 3-inch goose load. The red plastic hull represented 1/5 of his ammunition stockpile. The sound came to him again, a faint moaning, high-pitched, like a woman. It made the hair stand up on the back of his neck. Benji quickly looked around. His backup, the other half of the rear guard, was nowhere in sight. The dirt farmer gritted his teeth. He didn't have a clue where Jack was. The albino teenager moved noiselessly through the brush, like a wild animal. Jack was spooky in other ways, too. He had that long, stringy, dead-white hair, scarred white skin, and those awful ruby-red eyes. Benji thought about calling out to him, then thought better of it, realizing he would give away his own position. The question he faced was whether to investigate the source of the sound or to move quietly on. He had about made up his mind to keep going when he caught sight of something small and white moving on the other side of the screen of willows. He stepped closer to the branches for a better look. Through the breaks in the foliage, he could just make out the next stream channel over, and a pair of pale hands waving at him. Benji cautiously edged forward, far enough to see the carnage in the sand. Bloody remnants of clothing lay in a heap, bristling with buzzing black flies. More luckless waylaid refugees from Brighamville.
Help me. Oh, please help me.
Benji poked through the tangle of branches, 12-gauge first. It was a woman. She lay on her back on top of a fallen log, 10 feet from the pile of bodies. Her arms were tied at the wrists with close turns of heavy rope. The same kind of rope bound her midsection to the downed tree. Half her face was smeared with blood. It looked as though she'd taken a terrible beating, and worse. The hem of her long dress was pushed way up over her waist, exposing her naked flesh. Apparently, she had been abused, used, and left for the stickies to finish off. Over the bead sight of his shotgun, Benji scanned the stream channel and the bordering trees. There was no sign of the Coldhearts who had committed these atrocities. Though it looked safe to advance, part of him still wanted to withdraw, to slip silently away. While another part of him couldn't help but think, what if it had been his Uda bound there, helpless like that? What would he expect from an armed passerby? Then the woman raised her head slightly and said,
I know you. I know you from Brighamville.
Benji didn't recognize her, not with the gore all over her face, but her words made up his mind for him. He could consider turning his back on a total stranger, but not on a neighbor. The second that Benji stepped through the wall of willows into the middle of the dry stream channel, he realized something wasn't right. He could feel it, hard and cold, in the pit of his stomach. He started to retreat at once.
No, don't leave me here.
He took a good look at the woman as he continued to back up toward the tree line. Her black hair was cropped so short he could see the white skin of her scalp showing through on the sides of her head. She had huge, coal-black eyes. Frenzied eyes. He knew he'd never seen her before in his life. As Benji turned to run, the pack of cannies concealed in the willows rushed him from all sides. His legs felt as if 50-pound rocks were strapped to them, and they seemed to move in slow motion. At his back came a shriek of feminine laughter, then a heavy cudgel crashed down on his head from behind. At the stunning impact, the fingers of his right hand clenched reflexively. The 12-gauge fired, blowing a smoking crater in the sand at his feet. Benji was already mercifully unconscious as he sagged to his knees. Before he could slump onto his side, a heavy-bladed machete split his skull down the middle, from the back of his head to the bridge of his nose. The black-haired canny female who had lured Benji to his doom wasn't really tied up, and the blood on her mouth wasn't her own. She was first to reach the cleft skull with an eager tongue. Running in an easy, loping stride, Jack moved at right angles to the companion's line of travel. He picked his way through the gaps between Willow Islands, cutting a wide arc across the river bottom. His goal was to outflank and overtake the invisible hunters, and once he had position, to hit them hard from the blind side. Though the leapfrog maneuver was really a job for two, Jack had left the Brighamville dirt farmer behind. Benji was tangle-footed, and he had no field craft. Following the yard-wide trail Ryan and the others had made in the sand was about all he could handle. As the white-haired teen ran through the blinding heat, he had little doubt who their stalkers were. From the scant human remains he'd seen in the stream bed, he figured no way were the sneaking bastards a band of stickies. Stickies like to tear their victims to bloody shreds, but they rarely ate them. And stickies never bothered to steal personal belongings, either. They had no use for such things. They ran around half-naked and preferred to do their chilling cuerpo a cuerpo, using the powerful grip of the suckers and adhesive glands on their fingers and palms to rip away flesh and crack bone. Cannies, on the other hand, left next to nothing of their victims' bodies or worldly goods behind. They were usually otherwise norm, both in their outward appearance and in their lust for the things that norms valued, like blasters and gold. Cannies routinely stripped everything from their victims, taking away all but the bloody rags of their clothes. To put it simply, they killed, they ate, they robbed. Though not necessarily in that order. As Jack rounded the point of a willow island, he found what he'd been searching for. Even Benji couldn't have missed it. The sand of the stream channel before him was so churned up by footprints, it looked as if it had been plowed. He knelt and examined the riverbed. The freshly turned surface had already started to dry out, but the bottoms of the jumbled, overlaid tracks were still dark with moisture. From this, he guessed, the cannies were no more than 3 or 4 minutes ahead of him. A scan of the footprints gave him a rough head count. On this side of the river alone, there were maybe 20 of them, which was a much larger than usual band. And from the length of some of the strides, they were moving at a dead run. Jack sniffed at the air. The faint coppery scent of blood told him these particular cannies had chilled someone, and not long ago. Gore splattered from the murder, they weren't satisfied. They wanted more. The other refugees from Brighamville had been bushwhacked long before they'd gotten this far. As he straightened, Jack realized why the flesh-eaters were waiting to attack. Though there were lots of them,